Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Rates and Lanes with Rico Mohammed. This is the show where we improve your knowledge of the freight market, improve your bottom line, and improve the transportation industry as a whole. We're talking Rates and Lanes. Let's move on down the audio road.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Rico Mohammed coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia. And tonight we will be joined by our special guest, Mr. Transportation Attorney Extraordinary Henry Seaton will be joining us tonight to take on and answer all of your legal questions. So if you have any questions surrounding the transportation industry, whether it has to deal with contracts, negotiations, detention, any of that good stuff, we'll take those questions head on tonight. You'll get a chance to ask the man himself. You can just go ahead and press the number one, and that will get you in line for the call screener to get you up and on board. But tonight, we're going to start off the show like we normally do. Actually, we're going to, these past few weeks, we've been doing a kind of a new segment, and we've been kind of been letting everyone know about some different things that you need to be aware of as far as the when you're dealing with extending credit to some of these brokers, carriers, and freight forwarders out here. I've been kind of trying to let you guys know about the bad behavior people. And we're going to start off the show tonight and give you all the ones that have joined this kind of wall of shame list for this month, as a matter of fact. And we're going to start out with All Freight Logistics. That's MC number. Get your pen and pads ready. MC number 458-220. They have over $6,000 in non-payment complaints reported. The next one is Jade Freight Services. MC number 527-673. They have over $50,000 in non-complaint reports. FMCSA shows that their trust fund has been canceled. They are showing an extreme risk to haul for. Tenant Truck Lines, Inc., MC number 146754, over $82,000 in non-payment complaints. Integrated Wind Energy Services, LLC, MC number 670960, surety bond scheduled for cancellation on 5/1/16, nearly $6,000 in non-payment complaints. GRS Brokerage, LLC, and GRS Logistics, Inc., MC number 761962, over $13,000 in non-payment complaints reported. Nationwide Truck Lines, LLC, MC number 945764. FMCSA shows trust fund canceled, over $16,000 in non-payment complaints have been reported. Freight Connection, MC number 324188, over $7,000 in non-payment complaints reported. The next one on the list, and this list, I tell you, the list seems to grow more and more. Security Logistics, Inc., MC number 917072, trust fund canceled, over $11,000 in non-payment complaints reported. Transfreight United, LLC, MC number 761962, trust fund set to cancel on 5/4/16, over $31,000 in non-payment complaints reported. Extreme Risk, Value Line Transportation, Inc., and Value Line Transport, MC number 798483, over $17,000 in non-payment complaints reported. Surety bond is canceled. This broker also has ownership in two other brokerages as follows: Value Line Logistics, that MC number is 941067, and Value Line Freight Services, MC number 887696. And the last one to make the list this week is Our Specialty Transport Services, LLC, 642821 is their MC number. Trust fund is canceled, over $84,000 in non-payment complaints reported. Extreme Risk, hauling anything for Our Specialty Transport Services, LLC. that kind of wraps up this report. And this may even lead into since we've got Hank joining us tonight, this may even lead into a little bit more of a discussion on how to even handle and deal with certain situations when it comes to this. If you don't know how to go after or to file on a broker's bond or what kind of recourses that you may have, may be a good topic if anyone wants to, if you really want to follow that line of questioning. And let's see, we're going to jump over from that over into the fruit and vegetable truck rate report from the USDA. We have all markets except for three showing adequate supplies of trucks, so that means just about every market is kind of at a one-to-one ratio when it comes to loads to trucks. There are surpluses in these following markets, so these are the markets that you might want to make sure that you try to get a little bit extra going into those areas, because it's going to be really tough sledding trying to get out of there once you get there. San Luis Valley, Colorado is showing a surplus of trucks, which is an indicator that there are way more trucks than there are loads. Florida, down in Florida right now, we're showing that there are way more trucks than there are loads, a surplus. And in Minnesota, North Dakota, Red River Valley is showing a surplus of trucks in that area as well. We will be putting a link of this report up on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page for your convenience. That way you can have a chance to go over there and check the report out for yourself. Lots of good detailed information here. Just be careful about taking the rate information off of this report. As I've stated before, the rate information off this report is very misleading. So you have to be very careful about taking the rate information from here. But the information as far as what type of products are moving in those areas and stuff like that, it's very good information, some things that you can try to implement into your planning strategies for the coming weeks. And jumping over into this week's trend lines report for April 10th through the 16th, rates declined for vans, reefers, and flatbeds last week. Demand increased in major markets. They signaled that rates may soon rebound. And we're going to jump over and check out the U.S. van demand and capacity report for the previous week. Van load postings fell 6% last week, and truck postings increased 5%. That resulted in a 10% decline in the load-to-truck ratio from 1.6 down to 1.4 loads per truck. The national average van rate dropped 3 cents compared to the previous week. And looking at the report from this time in March of last month, van load postings increased 29% in March compared to February. Truck postings increased 9%, which boosted the load-to-truck ratio 18% from 1.4 up to 1.6 loads per truck compared to March of 2015. The ratio was down by 53%. Let's take a look and see how the van rates were performing for the week of April 10th through the 16th. The national average rate for vans fell 3 cents down to $1.50 per mile on average last week. Outbound rates increased in the west but failed in the northeast. The national average fuel price was $2.16 per gallon. That is a 3 cents jump from the previous week. And taking a look around the country, we'll start out up in the northeastern portion of the United States. We have Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, checking in as the representative city out of that area, showing an average rate of $1.56 per mile for dry vans. Moving down into the southeastern portion of the United States, we have Atlanta, Georgia, checking in, showing an average rate of $1.67 per mile for dry vans. Moving up into the Midwestern portion of the United States, we have Chicago, Illinois, checking in, showing an average rate at $1.75 per mile. Moving down to the South Central portion of the United States, Dallas, Texas, checks in, showing an average rate of $1.46 per mile. Moving out west, Los Angeles checks in, showing an average rate and setting the high water mark for dry vans at $1.84 per mile on average coming out of the West Coast. moving right along and jumping over into the U.S. flatbed demand and capacity report. Flatbed load volumes dipped 9% and capacity added 6% last week. That led to a 14% decline in the load-to-truck ratio from 23.5 down to 20.2 loads per truck. The national average flatbed rate decreased 1 cent per mile last week. Looking at this report from this time last month, flatbed load postings rose 66% in March compared to the previous month. Capacity dropped 1%. As a result, the load-to-truck ratio for the month rose 68% from 10.4 to 17.5 loads per truck compared to March of 2015. The ratio was up by 7%. Jumping over and checking on the flatbed rates, flatbed spot market rates slipped 1 cent last week to a national average of $1.91 per mile. The load-to-truck ratio declined 14% down to 20.2 loads per truck. We're going to take a look across the country up in the northeastern portion of the United States. Setting the high watermark, Harrisburg checks in, showing an average rate for flatbeds at $2.79 per mile up in the northeastern corridor. Moving down into the southeastern portion of the United States, we have Atlanta, Georgia checking in, showing an average rate of $2.22 per mile for flatbeds. Jumping up into the Midwest, Rock Island, Illinois checks in, showing an average rate of $2.44 per mile for flatbeds. Moving down into the south central portion of the United States, checking coming out of Houston, showing rates at $1.91 per mile for flatbeds. Jumping over to the West Coast, setting the low water mark on this portion of the report, coming out of Phoenix, Arizona, flatbeds showing an average rate of $1.68 per mile. And moving over to the reefer demand and capacity report for the week of April 10th through the 16th. Reefer load postings fell 1%, while truck postings increased 4% last week. As a result, the load-to-truck ratio declined 3% to 2.6 loads per truck. The national average reefer rate was down 2 cents to $1.78 per mile. Looking back over this time last month, reefer load postings increased 19% in March compared to the previous month, and the truck postings rose 12%. As a result, the load-to-truck ratio rose 6% from 3 up to 3.1 loads per truck. Compared to the demand of March of 2015, the ratio was down by 65%. And let's jump and check and see how reefer rates were performing over the previous week. Reefer rates fell 2 cents to a national average of $1.78 per mile. The national average load-to-truck ratio edged down for refrigerated trucks down to 2.9%. Checking the actual rates in different portions of the United States, in the northeastern portion, we have Elizabeth, New Jersey checking in, showing an average rate for reefers at $1.52 per mile. Down in the southeastern portion of the United States, coming out of Lakeland, Florida, we have average rates reported of $1.33 per mile. Moving up into the Midwest, which seems to always be the norm, coming out of Green Bay, Wisconsin, average rates showing $2.21 per mile. Down in the south central portion of the United States, coming out of the Rio Grande, McAllen, Texas, showing average rate of $1.81 per mile. And coming out of the left coast, Fresno, California, shows average rates of $1.88 per mile. And that will wrap us up for the DAT Trend Lines report for this week. And with that said, ladies and gentlemen, with no further ado, let's see if we can grab our special guest. And like I said, if you got any questions before we actually get into any particular topics, now's your time to go ahead and press the number one button to get in and ask your questions of transportation attorney Henry Seaton. So if you got any questions, you're dealing with anything as far as contract negotiations, anything with contracts, anything dealing with anything that you may be going through, if you got a legal matter in your business, now would be a time to actually get a hold of tank and get your questions answered from a truly, truly one of the true professionals in this industry, Mr. Hank Seaton. Hank, are you up and on board with us? Are you there tonight?
I am here. Can you hear me?
We can coming in loud and clear. Coming in loud and clear.
Okay, great.
Good deal, Hank. Well, maybe we'll start out tonight by letting you maybe catch us up on some happenings and goings on and what's been going on up on Capitol Hill and some things that we may need to be made aware of that may be going under the radar right now.
Sure, I'll be happy to do that. Let me also say as an introduction that I really appreciate you giving out that list of challenged brokers. If you'll circle back with me after this, I've got a way to maybe publicize that, and the issue of collection is something that's near and dear to my heart, too. So if there's anyone that has a collection question tonight, I'll be happy to try to field that. Now, to talk a little bit about what's going on in Washington, the big sleeper, the thing that you're not going to read about in transport topics and hear very little about, is that the agency has finally come out with its ultimate safety fitness determination rule, which is really kind of a slap in the face to Congress. Congress is FAST Act, among other things, that safe to operate is safe to use, took down CSA SMS scores for at least 28 months, told the agency they had to come up with a corrective action plan before they could repost it, and told them not to go to a safety fitness determination rulemaking until they'd done all that. Within a month, the agency had published over 1,500 pages in a safety fitness determination and told the agent and told the public that you got 2 months to respond to this. Congress is mad as a wet hen at the agency. Has hauled them down there to answer some questions. 33 congressmen have asked that the agency be defunded over it, but whether that's all just a lot of smoke and not a lot of fire remains to be seen. A lot of us who are not fans of the agency's bureaucratic overreach are looking very closely at this rulemaking, and as you can imagine, it's really very tedious. But I can tell you just in broad brushes that they try to seek to reinstitute publication of SMS scores by calling them raw scores. They seek to vindicate the notion that they could put a carry out of business based on roadside inspections only. And with respect to the audits that we've traditionally had, which are called compliance reviews, in which the attitude of the auditor is supposed to be one who comes in without a particular hidden agenda to look at your books and records. Now it's going to be called an investigation. And if the agency can find that you have violated one acute violation or one critical violation in two of their basics, guess what? You get a finding of unfit, and in 2 weeks you're out of business. So, there's much not to like in this rule, and having said that, I particular concern to those on the line who maybe have their own authority and be small carriers or work for small carriers, because clearly the system is rigged so that the agency will be able to actually conduct investigations on more small carriers, realizing that they really make up about 90% of the carriers the agency is required to regulate. So that's the happy news on the biggest rulemaking that's in the pipeline. Of course, with the wind down to the Obama administration, there are six or seven other rulemakings playing themselves out, including ELDs and driver training rules and just a plethora of other topics. I can give everybody a website if they're interested in running through a tick list of other issues with a short explanation of where it is. But that's probably enough talking on my part, Rico. If there are questions concerning that or anything else, I'll be happy to answer.
Well, we got someone with their hand raised, and we'll go directly to them. Let's go and check and see what Jeff has for us tonight. Jeff, you're up live and on board with Hank and Rico. How can we help?
Hey, fantastic. Good to hear from you guys. I'm a small carrier running under, of course, my own authority, and been doing that for a year and a half. Too small to really have, any of my own customers yet. So I've been mainly working the spot market, working the board, and got a great load paying with two drops out of Jersey to Denver with a stop in Cincinnati. It was real hot, paid real good, but actually the reality is it's not going to pay at all. It's one of the brokers that was listed off of you guys this morning.
Wow.
I got and it was that was how I learned from my TAFS agent. We use TAFS for factoring. It was a good load. We were busy focusing on, the work that needed to be done to get it done. And I didn't check the credit. And it wasn't until after I submitted the invoice that I found out that they wouldn't, buy the receivable because of the history of the broker and that kind of thing. So as a guy who I use for dispatching likes to say that every form of education is expensive. But I was called, we went ahead and Googled, we started to hit the 60-day number as far as when the payment was due, and we were promised that the check was on the way, and it was going, and we realized that was not true. And we had Googled, and we'd found, I guess, there's an attorney or a law firm maybe that was kind of hip to whoever's behind this brokerage and does this, opens and closes them, never really having any intention to pay. And I think I've heard that mentioned on this show, and I think we were about 45 days when I'd heard that mentioned, and I said, oh, I hope we're not in that situation, but that's exactly the situation we're in. But I have no idea what the actual process is. In my mind, I've just kind of considered that money gone. If we ever get any of it, I would be kind of amazed. But just, calling with a general, question, what's the outline, how does that generally work? That was really
okay.
The nature of my call.
Let me give you a tick list of things to do in that situation. Number one, if you take a load and your factor won't buy it, you've got to lean on that load for payment of the freight charges. Don't deliver the load until you get the broker to advance you the money. Number two, if you've delivered the shipment and you find out that there's something wrong with the broker, you need to give him 10 days notice to pay you, and then you need to send your invoice to the shipper and the consignee. In order to preserve the right to do that, you need to be sure that every load you pick up has your name as the carrier on the bill of lading. If your name is on the bill of lading as the carrier, you have recourse to the consignor. If you've got reason to think you're not being paid, you need to invoice the consignor. He won't have a food fight with the consignor if you get to him early enough so he's still got some of the broker's money in his jeans. If you wait, you're going to have a real pissing contest with the consignor who's not going to want to pay twice. We can and will make the broker the consignor pay twice, but it's not really economically reasonable to chase a one shot. I've been doing this for 25 years. I've got some cases in which I'm in one right now in which a crooked broker was in the middle. He was scamming the shipper. The shipper should have known about it. We sued the shipper for $287,000, and we're the third carrier to find out about it. The other two were taken. One was taken for $1.5 million, and the other was taken for $500,000. So this kind of stuff goes on all the time. Small carriers are preyed by it. There is recourse. I've often said that bad debts are not like good wine. They don't get better with age. I am not one who believes in in jumping out there and doing things frivolously, but you got reason to think you're not being paid, you need to preserve recourse to the constant R. And if you think that payment is in jeopardy, don't deliver the load until you insist you get paid. Now, you know, they say possession is 9/10 of the law, and yes, indeed it is. But you can't, your chances of getting that payment have diminished over time. If you're now 60 days downstream, you're probably going to have some difficulty with recourse. Now, on the bond claim, this guy should have a bond. And the bond claimant, you need to file on time. And you need to press to be paid. You know, if the guy is a big-time crook and they want to prorate $75,000 over $250,000, you're not going to get something, but you're going to get something, but you're not going to get much. So,
sure.
You know, we down here in the South have a Southern general who's in great disrepute now, but he used to say, "Get there firstest with the mostest." And when you're talking about collection, that is really the issue, is being sad. So I hope I've given you some. I hope I've given you some pointers on that. I've actually, if you go to my website, which is transportationlaw.net, you will see that we have PowerPoint presentations. You may even have an audio on collecting freight charges that will go in a little greater detail what we talked about.
Okay. Now, you said to file on time on the bond claim because, you know, we were given, you know, what in hindsight was an empty promise that, you know, the check was going to go out at the 60-day because that's how the contract read. So,
the contract read 60-day pay?
That is what I was told by the broker when we asked if there was a quick pay option because we're a small carrier. We can't really float. That's
well,
the reason we use the factory
company.
That,
but, I mean, you had to sign a broker-carrier agreement with this broker. And my question to you is, you can sign away a lot of your rights if you don't look at that contract. Number one, a 60-day pay is an abnormal period of time for a broker to ordinarily pay. Now, some people offer quick pay, but 30 days is the standard. You're a small guy, can't wait 60.
Right.
Well,
that should have been what you're saying. That should have been a red flag to me.
If you turn over the factor on day one, he's probably about ready to give it back to you in 60 days.
Got it. Right.
Right.
And, you know, the other thing that you might want to look into is obviously, you know, factors charge a good bit of money to advance money to you, but one service they do provide is they're more savvy in terms of who to extend credit to than you are. You know, if they say a guy's a bad apple, then, you know, you need to turn down the load. One of the things that I'd like to do, talk to you about, Rico, I don't know where you got the source of this list, but I can get these deadbeat lists posted on websites and added to help guide people who want to participate and find out you know what credit is involved. Remember this: unless you give up your recourse in a bill in your contract by saying under no circumstances will you go to the shipper or broker, you have the legal right to collect freight charges pursuant to the bill of lading from any party legally liable for it. So you need to instruct your truck drivers to be looking at the bills of lading when they pick up to ensure that their name is on it as the carrier. And if they think they're picking it up from All Freight as the broker and J.B. Hunt's name's on the bill, then you probably know that somebody is double brokering this thing.
Okay. Okay, got it. You had mentioned something about the bond claim and filing it on time since we've waited the 60 days, you know, just out of our own not knowing. What would you consider, what's considered
filing
on time?
Here's the situation. The FMCSA is required to come down with regulations specifying how a bondsman gets rid of his 75 grand. Ultimately, a bondsman is supposed to give public notice, is supposed to close out the bond and then pay on a pro rata basis. Unfortunately, the agency hasn't come down with that decision, and bonding companies handled it in two or three different ways. Some will give the notice to the FMCSA and wait 30 days thereafter before they split out the money because, you know, the money is theirs to keep until they're forced to pay it up. If that's it, your 60-day claim may still be in place. You still may have time. What you got to do is you got to get the name of the bonding company or bank trust off of the FMCSA website. You've got to send them a formal letter making a claim. You should attach your invoices and bills of lading. You should insist that the load is due, owing, and past due, and you should insist upon an immediate response because a lot of these people would just simply drag the response, and you've got to follow up on it. If they send you a letter back that says, we're sorry, we paid out the full $75,000, then, you know, you say, I need to see the list of who you paid and on what time you did. They can argue that your case is not timely, but I wouldn't assume that it is. Unfortunately, there are a lot of small carriers like you who see that the guy owes a bunch of money. They see he's a runner and a big-time player, and they just don't know how to file the bond, and they figure, what the heck. I know in one of the recent claims, I had a guy who had six figures that he was due, and I thought, well, gee, I'll just file on this bond. I know there were millions of dollars that's owed to him, and actually I got over half the bond stake simply because the other guys just thought the losses were too big to be blown off. So, I mean, you know, it's certainly worth pursuing. If you need help on that, I think Rico's got my contact information. I'll be happy to help you file the bond and give you some advice on it.
All right. Well, appreciate you guys. Always enjoy listening to you.
Thank
sure,
you,
you're
Jeff.
Welcome.
Appreciate you helping. And I'm sorry to hear that you had to go through that, Jeff, but that's one of the reasons why we wanted to try to add that to part of our podcast is bringing that information to light as far as, you know, these guys that are out there doing these types of things and just trying to keep it at the forefront of, we got new people coming in all the time. And if we can save somebody, great. But I hate that Jeff went through that, but at least it does show and shed some light that, you know, this just not a big boogeyman thing that, well, it didn't happen to me or that could never happen to me. That's living proof to show that, you know, this is a reality and this is something that we need to be cognizant of in our businesses.
Yeah, a small man, you know, you're paying a factor fee and all of that, but you can't afford to take very many of these freight charge hits. So, you know, you really need to be savvy and to get there first is with the most. You know, I can teach you how to read a bill of lading to kind of spot when things don't smell right. You know, I can help educate you in terms of what to look for in terms of when they want you to surrender recourse, they want you to have 60 days to pay, and they don't want to pay your interest and attorney's fees. All of those things are stacked against you, and you've got a real reason to be concerned.
And Jeff had made mention about one of his I think he said the guy that does his dispatch and say all education is expensive. Well, I can tell you one thing, Jeff, if you haven't had an opportunity, and this is unsolicited from Hank, but Hank has an excellent book out there that I've kind of like just really been yelling this thing off the mountaintop. So anybody that has their own authority or even thinking about getting their own authority, they need to have that in their repertoire, in their library. And that book is Protecting Motor Carriers' Interest in Contracts, written by our very own Mr. Hank Seaton. Excellent book. It kind of goes down the list of some very detailed things that you need to be on the lookout for in all of your contracts. Not to say that you know, in a real world, not to say that you're going to absolutely positively get all of those concerns necessarily mitigated, but it's something that you need to be aware of. And if you know, it helps to be aware of certain things that come to your attention that you need to stay clear of, absolutely stay clear of. And that 60-day thing might have been one of those telltale signs that kind of make your antenna go up to say, "Ooh, I might want to steer clear on this one." But definitely, you can pick that book up.
We were promised 30 years ago with deregulation that we're going to have fair and open competition in a free marketplace. And I think a lot of people got into it with the same idea that we had 30 years ago, in which most people that were in trucking were basically honest, hardworking folks. And, you know, with the Internet and people doing business with folks they don't know, it's kind of become like that show Catfish. You know, you just don't really know who it is that's on the other end of the line. And, you know, the Internet is full of charlatan, and larceny by fraud seems to be a white-collar crime that everybody can get away with. So, you know, it really is caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It looks like we got another caller here. We have Jay in Dallas, Georgia. Let's see if we can grab Jay and get him up and on board with us. Jay, you're on live.
Evening.
With Rico and Hank. How can we help?
Evening, Rico and Hank. How y'all doing this evening?
Doing well.
Good, good. Rico, at the top of the program, you were reading off the rates, the average rates in various segments of the country for reapers and what have you. And it would seem to me, based on what Hank has been talking about so far, that a lot of those rates are kind of skewed higher by these unscrupulous brokers who typically pay you the nice, fat rates that are very attractive. Now, I'm going into my third year of authority, and I've been dealing with the big guys like TQL, Coyote, and people like that, and I don't ever see rates anywhere near as high as what you're talking about for reapers. Can you give me some guidance on how to handle that?
Certainly. Right now, Jay, one of the problems that you're going to have, especially in the spot market, is it's a demand. It's, you're kind of dealing with the creature of supply and demand. And if you're in an area where the supply of trucks is greater than the demand for those trucks, then, you know, you're kind of going to have to – that's where the market is going to take a swing, which is where you're going to see lower rates than what we're actually reporting. But now, dealing with the bigger guys, some of those guys you have to also keep in mind. Some of those, the bigger guys, the CHs and the TQLs and all those guys, they kind of have a set commission rate. Now, that's not to say that the rates are not there, but they're dealing off of a set rate that they want a set profit margin that they want to make off of each load. And depending upon, and the only way that you're going to be able to chip into those into that market share that they're trying to hold for themselves in some cases is a couple of things. You're going to have, you know, develop the relationships with one particular broker at that company that, you know, once you develop that relationship or that bond with that person, then they may be more apt to negotiate with you a little bit more even-handedly. The second thing is that you're going to have to make sure that you are doing actual good market analysis and research on the area that you're in. If you're in an area where you're going to be dealing on the spot market where you got a little bit of an advantage, you're going to have to hold out for that every penny that you're going to be able to get. Now, right now, it's an uber competitive market on the spot market, which is why we've been telling everyone and kind of been imploring everyone to try their best to go out and start doing their own marketing to get their own customers, because it is just brutal. It is really brutal out here on the spot market dealing with these guys just off of the load boards. You know, it's getting harder and harder, tighter and tighter. As a matter of fact, you're not the only one that's going through it. I'm looking at a report right now. It says Knight, Warner, Landstar all report lower first quarter earnings. You know, so these are some of the major carriers that are you know, in a weaker freight market right now. It's just really tight and really tough. So, you know, it's getting tight on every end. But like I say, dealing with the broker and everything, it's just one of those things where you got to kind of brush up and get your negotiating skills. Kevin Rutherford mentions this all the time. You know, a broker, all he's doing is he's on the phone negotiating day in and day out. He's negotiating with shippers and he's negotiating with carriers. So they're pretty good at negotiating. 9 times out of 10, us as carriers, that's not necessarily our forte. We're a little bit uncomfortable with haggling and going back and forth and dealing with the negotiation. But one thing we have to try to do is develop our negotiating skills and our negotiating tactics. If that means, you know, listening to audiobooks that involve negotiating, try to pick up different tactics, you know, maybe ask some other guys, hey, what type of strategies are you using to find a little bit of success in some of the things that you're doing? Now, you know, of course, you want to take, you know, free advice is exactly what it's worth, exactly what you pay for. You know, it's free, so you got to take that with a grain of salt as well. But, you know, there are some people out here that are willing, that are successful, that are willing to share some advice and give you some pointers and some tips that you may be able to incorporate into what it is that you're trying to do. And Hank, you got something that maybe you want to add to that portion as far as negotiating is concerned?
Yeah, you know, I mean, unfortunately, has always been in the free market a question of supply and demand. And if you'd ask me this time last year, all of the great poobahs were saying that we were in a driver shortage and that happy days were going to be here again and that your lane report was going to show that things were really out of balance and that the broker boys were going to have to pay a little more money to get the freight moved so that the fact that you had a truck in the area and could wait out the right move was going to give us more negotiating leverage. Unfortunately, what I'm seeing now is everybody saying, for whatever reason, the economy hadn't perked up, the freight isn't there, we've got Amazon and these people are changing their distribution patterns away from truckload freight, and it's kind of hard to negotiate with somebody who doesn't value you, and he's got 5 other people calling him in the same location that wants to go to the same area. So, you know, I don't have an answer for how you negotiate effectively in the spot market, particularly when your first job is to decide whether or not you're going to go to the big boys who are going to whip you up about making an on-time delivery and penalize you if they think there's a claim, versus identifying the small but honest smaller broker who's working on a different percentage and willing to give you a bit more. I think that, you know, some of these large brokers are backing the money or a series of agents. So, you know, they've got to cut that percentage multiple times. And, you know, I think some of them laugh at a 20%, at a 15 to 20% commission when they think they can beat more out of the carriers. So, you know, I think there's a lot of piggishness among some of the big leaders, and I can understand the caller's problem of how do you hit that sweet spot for the guy who's got 20,000 carriers calling it, and the small guy who's honest and going to pay you. And you know, I think it's really tough in the spot market to do it. We've had people talk before about the importance of trying to be lane directed in terms of your service so that you can be that repeat dependable customer, getting home with dependable freight and develop some experience, some expertise in handling that may endure to, you know, you being a preferred backhauler for people. I think just calling on the spot market and saying, look, I'm Tommy Two Truck and I need to get home from Omaha doesn't get you very far.
Right, right. And I'm going to go to jump around here and let's see here. Maybe we got our good friend from Canada, Mr. Chuck Snow, joining us tonight, as a matter of fact. Hey, Chuck, are you there?
Hey, Rico, how are you?
I'm good, Chuck, and yourself?
Really good. I'm really enjoying this show. I got to tell you, sometimes it's much better to sit on the sidelines and listen instead of talk. Hank, I'm really enjoying what you're saying. And Rico, as always, I love listening to you. You're both making a ton of sense tonight. One thing I want to bring up here, you had brought up the point about the small trucking companies going directly to shippers, and which we banter back and forth about all the time. But I can tell you that one of the issues that you have as a small trucking company trying to get into produce, the produce buyers and the produce shippers do not want to deal with a guy with one truck. It's too much work. And if you want to make more money hauling produce, you probably want to tie up with a produce company maybe. Quite often on the produce brokerage end, I can tell you from experience, there's not a whole lot. Quite often we're working on 8%. That's about it. And on top of that, what happens is on produce, we get a bunch of loads and then the price goes up and we lose money. And I think all of the players in produce go through the same thing. You commit to 30 loads, let's say, and you make money on 10 or 15 or even 20. And the last 10, everything you made on the previous loads, you lose. And that happens more often than not. So, again, produce is the starting point of the spot market. Unless by chance you can make arrangements with a company that has steady supply and you give them a year-round price. But most produce is seasonal, and they have a season. But there are some big players out there that when they're finished with one commodity in produce, they take another out of the same region, and they will work with a year-round price. It's pretty rare, but it does happen. The vast majority of produce buyers have found that the spot market works best for them, and that has a direct effect on everybody out there that's listening that has trucks. Now, oddly enough, there seems to be a bit of a renaissance with some of the big players opening up produce hauling divisions. And I think this has more to do with them servicing clients at a different level, probably on a year-round rate where they can say to a large grocery chain, we can give you X number of trucks. But again, this also ties into the fact that they either have teams or they're going to start running almost like the relay system that we saw when I first got into it, where a carrier took a load so far and then another truck would take it the next leg. And we may have to do that, as you and I have discussed on the show before. But
I really appreciate your comments, because I've dabbled with produce hauls for years, and it is far more of an art form than it is a business. It's traditionally been a situation in which the truck broker accepted the liability for the timely delivery of the goods. The truck broker worked on shorter margins. It just it developed in a deregulated environment. The vast majority of the produce is handled by very small carriers, with the exception of England and a few other large produce haulers. I think that's still pretty much the form. It's been very difficult as a lawyer to represent a motor carrier involved in produce. Even now, we're trying to work with some responsible carriers and brokers and shippers to come up with a way to arbitrate produce claims rather than just have the consignee close the doors and say, you bought the load, sucker. It takes a tough man to work in produce. I do think you're right, particularly when you say that I'm seeing some larger players get in it. There is a demand, particularly from the grocery houses, who are taking over the transportation and the inbound to try to have some consistency and predictability. One thing that's involved in that whole mess that may be a game changer, at least we've been talking about it for years, is the new Food Safety Modernization Act and all the flipping rules that came down last month having to do with just scotching up the supply chain. And, you know, I think that'll be hit heavily on the front end. There's some broker requirements that are coming downstream. Small carriers have some exemptions, but I think you're going to see more regulation in produce than we've had before, particularly by the FDA. And that's going to be something that those of you guys who are in the produce industry are going to have to be on top of as well.
We actually got somebody online right now with a question about the FDA rules.
Well, I really enjoyed it. I'm going to sign off, Rico and Hank. I really enjoyed talking to you both, and I'll leave some room for some other people to call in. Keep up the great work, both of you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Chuck. Thank you. And look forward to speaking with you next week. All right, let's see here. Let's go to the question about the FDA rule. Let's see if we can grab Bruce and get him up and on board with us. Bruce, you're up on live with Rico and Hank Seaton. Go ahead with your question.
Well, Rico, once again, you guys are knocking one out of the park. I mean, you guys hitting on things that are pertinent to the industry. And I like Chuck and Hank were talking earlier, I guess I'd ask Hank to expound a little bit more on what the impact of the new FDA food safety transportation rules are going to mean to motor carriers, both large and small.
Well, you know, some of our worst concerns going into it, and I was working with the Agriculture Transportation Committee and have tried to follow it, and us lawyers came out with all of these notions of doom and gloom. They're setting some, as I understand it, they're setting some pretty close requirements in terms of temperature certifications that have to be made. Apparently, they're leaving a lot of that up to the contract between the shipper and the carrier. So you can expect that the truck brokers are involved in it too. I think it'll hit first on the shipper side, and you'll start seeing the bill of lading having additional requirements. There's certainly going to be some concern about certifications for the trailer, its cleanliness, the fact that it's pre-cooled. The chain of custody issues are going to be addressed. Fortunately, one of the things that we were really concerned about was that FDA would come down with this notion that if the product is 2 degrees hot, it must be destroyed, which would create claims problems that would take away the right to mitigate. The rules didn't come down that harshly. For years, a lot of the retail grocery houses particularly have been taking this attitude that if the seal is broken, the load must be destroyed. We were concerned that there was going to be a greater foundation for that position in the act, and it's not there. So where I see it mainly is on the cargo claim side. I've got cases running now where the back doors of the reefer are thrown open and you're told to pull to dock 8, which is a non-refrigerated dock, and they start unloading you 2 hours late. And so the back two skids are already warm, and now they say, take the rest of it and get out of my face. And we were concerned that FDA would be so concerned about contamination that they would put the refrigeration requirements in it. They're not there. One thing I can do individually, Rico, for the people that are on the line, or I can forward to you for posting a fairly good analysis of the Food Modernization Safety Act. In fact, I tell you what I will try to do. I'm going to give you a website. It's called transcomply.com. crensply.com. That's crensply.com. And I will see within 24 hours that we have a pretty good summary of the Food Safety Modernization Act posted. That the caller or anybody else that wants to get a primer on it can review. It's not very lengthy, but it will affect you. In terms of the phase in, and I don't know whether it's, you know, at the 3 or 4 truck level, but some of the requirements that were imposed on carriers, there is a small carrier exemption for, which is going to be helpful.
Okay, we got a link of that, transcomply.com, up on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page for everybody that wants to maybe go there and check that out. Also, we have
I'll be sure. There may be something on it now, but I'll be sure that there is a decent article posted on it by this time tomorrow.
We have, and we also have Hank Seaton's website posted up on the Rates and Lanes Facebook page for those of you that may need, have some other issues and things that you may have going on. Definitely, please, if you got some things going on in your professional life and you need help with, you know, and Hank has not asked me to do this, it's just something that I think is right. You know, Hank takes time out of his schedule to come on here once a month and share and impart knowledge with us. So, you know, if there's ever an opportunity for us to ever give back or to use Hank's services, by all means, you know, I encourage everybody that's listening, you know, and I've done this personally myself, Hank, and those guys helped me out with an issue when I had a driver up in Baltimore. They weren't able to do it themselves, but they farmed it out. They told me who to go to, and they pointed me in the right direction and got absolute great results out of the person that they referred me to. So, you know, that's an unsolicited endorsement coming from myself, but
You're getting close to close. There's one thing I'd like to get anybody that's on the line to take down this email address. It's called survey, S-U-R-V-E-Y dot transadvice, T-R-A-N-S-A-D-V-I-S-E. Yeah, trans.
Do that one more time, Hank.
TRANSADVISE.com. Now, what that is that is basically a survey. It won't take long for you to complete. The use of this is going to be in this safety fitness determination, and the questions you're going to be asked relate to whether or not when you're stopped for an inspection, you feel as though all of your good inspections are turned into the FMCSA. The reason for this is their mechanism is measuring you based upon the accumulated points divided by the number of inspections. And what we're trying to probe is the extent to which small carriers in particular feel as though they'll do a walk around if they don't see anything that's wrong with your equipment. They say you're free to go, but they don't write you up as having a clean inspection. And, you know, I'm not trying to color your view of that. I'm just saying that we've got this survey out to thousands of carriers, and you know when you send it out to thousands of people, you may be lucky to get hundreds of responses. But in any way, we're going to use the data kind of as a polling mechanism, particularly for small carriers, to determine if they believe that they are fairly being reported based on the scales. Some people report that they've actually been told you don't write no good reports. Other people in particular areas feel as though the scale houses do a good job of reporting the good, the bad, and the ugly. We just like to have your experiences. Your name is not going to be reported. You're not going to get visited by anybody. It's just we just need a candid input. So if a few of you have enjoyed the podcast, it will take time to fill that out. It will be very helpful. And it's designed so it can be filled out by carrier owners and owner-operators and drivers as well.
All right, we got one more question in before we try to close out real quickly. Let's see if we can grab Tom real quick. Tom, you're up live with Rico and Hank. How can we help?
Hey, this is Tom. Hey, Rico. Hey, my question is really very short. I negotiated a rate with a major carrier. The rate I negotiated was $14.25. They sent me a rate con saying $22.50. I signed it, sent it back. Then they turned around and sent me all the information for the pickup and so forth. Am I going to be on the hook for later? I signed up for quick pay immediately, too. Am I going to be on the hook for this? Or because we got a rate con that said $22.50, is that what the amount they owe me?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, when you do negotiations with somebody and the negotiations are incorporated into writing, and what comes across the transom isn't what you agreed to, you got to call them back or mark through the $22.50 and put the $14.50 and send it back to them and call them up and say, hey, Pete, we agreed to the greater amount. I can't do $22.50 because, you know, it's a rule of construction that regardless of what kind of dickering you may have, when there is a signed written agreement, it's what's called the doctrine of merger. Whatever you've otherwise talked about is on the four paces, the four corners of that piece of paper. So, you know, okay. I mean, I think, you know, if you are doing business with a big asset-based carrier, you know, the best you can do is probably.
Oh, no, I am the carrier. That's the thing.
Is the broker an asset-based broker? I mean, you know, depending on who the guy is.
The broker is TQL.
Oh, gee, you got it.
I'm a single truck operation.
Yeah, let me tell you, whatever you sign with TQL is what they'll hold you to.
Okay, so that means that they owe me the $22.50 then, correct? Minus the quick pay fee. That's all I wanted to make sure of. I want to make, because that's coming due here tomorrow, and I want to make sure they don't try to come back on me on it.
Well, why would they come back on you unless they had a claim? I mean,
well,
they sent him a rate confirmation greater than the rate that they negotiated for. He negotiated for fourteen and a quarter, $1,425, and they sent him a rate confirmation for $2,200 and some odd dollars. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Oh, they sent you a rate confirmation for a greater amount?
That's it.
Yeah.
So it's called take the money and run.
Yeah, did you sign that load confirmation and send it back to them?
Yes, I sent the load confirmation back to them. When I sent the load confirmation back, then they turn around and send you the driver instructions.
Yeah, basically the law goes both ways. If they offered you $22.50, you know, oh, happy day. Now, you know, obviously the money's in their pocket. They may catch the mistake and say, well, you know, it was a clerical error, yada yada yada, and you know, try to break the extra $700 out of you. But you've got in writing, you know, what you agreed to accept it for, and you know, legally, I think you got a pretty good argument.
Okay. Yeah. According to the customer, that's how much they
want to negotiate with you. But you know, like I said, the doctrine of merger would say that's why you got a written load confirmation.
Okay. You may have somebody.
You know, they have agents, and you may have somebody call Dave. It gives you a call on the phone and says, "Now look, man, I made a clerical mistake here. My bosses are jumping all over me. You know, would you accept the original amount? I shouldn't have sent it in for that amount. But, you know, when they sent you $22.50 and you signed off on it, whatever, and sent it back, then you're ahead of the game. I'm sorry, I've never heard those kind of mistakes falling in favor of the carrier.
Yeah. Trust me, I haven't either after I don't know how many,
the other
over
way
20
around
years
is the
out
way
here.
It usually goes, you know, you're halfway in route, and then you get the load confirmation sheet here. A few hundred dollars short.
Yep. All right, well, that's all I needed to find out. I just wanted to make sure on this, if I had, you know, what the legal grounds were.
Sure.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, Tom. Hank, you got time for one more?
Sure.
All right, let's go to Steve. Steve has a question about rate confirmations.
Hi there.
All right, Steve, you're up on the board with Hank and Rico. How can we help?
Well, I wanted to make a comment on that last call there. You know, he agreed, he called, he made an agreement with a man, and then the guy, as much as I just like total quality, an agreement is an agreement. It's like a handshake. When you agree to do something, that means you should stick to it. If how would you like to hire that guy to mow your lawn and you agree on $20 a week if you signed a contract and your wife put down $200 and he's going to stiff you? That's not right at all. I mean, whatever happened to pride, decency, and honesty out here? You know, when a guy makes a agreement, he should stick to it. Hire hell water. You know, it's just the way it is. It's got lost through all these negotiations, and you got to have good faith and good dealings and a pride, decency about yourself. You know, I
saw
the guy.
Listen, I admire your honesty. I agree with you in terms of a man standing to his agreement. All I can tell you is, if I negotiate to buy a house for one fee, and the contract comes in, and they say, "All right, you need to go to closing, and here's the paperwork." Whatever I sign is the deal I have to stick with. And, I can't fault you in terms of the virtue of sticking to it. I think that probably the best issue when that load confirmation came over would be to call them back and say, "Hey, buddy, I'm happy to see this is $22.50, but I hope this is not some kind of clerical mistake." You know, I think the best cause of action would have been, before you signed it, to call back and verify that, yes, it is $22.50 or whatever it is. But I'm just saying that legally, with load confirmation sheets and the rest of this stuff, both parties are bound by what they sign.
Right, and
the meeting of the mind is when the contract is inked.
And I agree with the caller. You know, integrity sometimes is all is the very last thing that you may have, and if you want to represent yourself as having a good business and having integrity about yourself, then you know, a stand up person, you know, normally will call back and make that thing right. So I definitely kudos out to you, Steve, for bringing that, you know, for, you know, standing up on that high moral ground. And that's one of those things that, you know, you can't legislate morality. You know, that's something that each person has to make an individual call about. And with that said, ladies and gentlemen, that's going to just about wrap us up for the night. We want to thank everyone, listeners, callers, that helped participate in tonight's program. Of course, shouts out to Mr. Hank Seaton for taking time out of his busy schedule for coming on board and fielding these questions, because this thing is totally unscripted. Hank doesn't know exactly what he may be facing from week to week when he comes on here, but, you know, he takes time out of his schedule and he knocks them out of the park every time. And we also want to give shout out and thanks to Kevin and Lisa Rutherford, the entire Let's Truck team. Just a reminder, CMC Live 2016 is fastly approaching. The dates are May 16th through the 20th. It's going to be up in Council Bluffs, Iowa this year. For anyone that is looking to take advantage of the CMC, I think that they're still doing registration. You can go to the website, letstruck.com, and you can sign up for get up and on board. They have payment plans for the CMC. So if you guys want to take advantage of that, of course, that's always there for you. This has been the Rates and Lanes podcast with Rico Muhammad, with special guest Mr. Hank Seaton. I want to thank you, everyone, again, for calling in and participating. God bless you. Good night. Thanks again, Hank.
Sure. Let's talk sometime in the next couple of days, Rico. That list, the sure. Good Beat list you got, where do you get that?
Bill Bixby, the attorney, I got a list from him, and I also have a list from Lowboard that I use.
Who's Bill Bixby with? I don't know. I don't recognize the name.
I have to go back and dig that email up, Hank. I can forward it to you.
Okay. Please do. That would be great.
I still got it. I can forward it over to you.
All right. Thanks, my friend.
We'll
enjoy
do.
It tonight.
Thank you.
Talk to you later.
Hey, thanks.